It's Thursday, March 27th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Hey, everyone. Well, this is a third try to get the show started, and yes, I do have a good show for you tonight, so strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from historic Portsmouth, New Hampshire via the portable Geek News Central studio. And we are also live on Ustream. Actually, the folks on Ustream got a good laugh because it took me a total of three tries to get started tonight on the show. I just was stumbling through. Typical stuff for me on a day when I'm not 100% organized. But for all of you that are checking out the show for the very first time, hey, welcome to the Geek News Central podcast. My name is Todd Cochran. And, of course, you can get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Of course, you can look at the archive podcast available via the podcast link on the website. Make sure you get signed up for our newsletter so you get the newsletter delivered directly to your inbox immediately following the show, which contains all of the show notes of all the content that we're going to talk about tonight, all the links, so that when you're listening to the show or after you've listened to the show, you can go back and review the articles that you felt were worthy of your review. But, of course, I want to welcome all of you to the show. It's been a very interesting week here in New Hampshire. It's cold still. I mean, what is the deal? Is winter ever going to end? I just don't get it. I really, really don't. And I tell you, I am not used to it. I really am. I am ready to go back to Hawaii. And we're going to talk a little bit about I just have this an amazing flight going back. And I'm saying that very sarcastically. But most importantly, I want to remind everyone, we've got the Portsmouth meetup tomorrow. Okay, so if you are going to be coming out, I need to hear from you by tomorrow about noon, 3 o'clock Eastern time. And the plan is, and I've got the post up on the Geek News Central website, is to have everyone meet here at the hotel I'm staying at between 6 and 7. We'll have some cocktails and some drinks, and we'll then move from here over to a restaurant that I have got reservations set up for. We're going to be having seafood while on the East Coast, and of course up here might as well have seafood. This place has been highly recommended. It's called Jumpin' Jay's Fish Cafe, and it's on Congress Street here in Portsmouth. So we'll be going over there a little after 7, so I look forward to seeing everyone that's going to be coming up. But you must RSVP with me by tomorrow midday. Please call the cell. Please call me up at 808-741-4923. And for some smart aleck that's going to try to call me now that's listening on Ustream, I do have you on Buzz, and that's where you will be. But what else? Okay, so we'll have the meetup tomorrow, or actually Friday evening. And hope that you'll come out and be fun to kick back. We may be having some other podcasters come up from Boston, so it should be a good time by all. Running on just a few hours sleep. I've done well all the way through the week, but for some reason, last night is either the jet lag caught up with me or something. I don't know, but I'm running on about 3 hours, maybe 2.5 hours sleep today. So we should have some fun on the show. There should be some, how should I say it? Me stumbling over words, so we'll see how that goes. But anyway, you know, how many of you have been on travel or even just, you know, had a laptop you've had for a while? And I'm actually looking at it right now. We had, someone in the Ustream feed says Toddisms. Of course, that is an understatement. But how many of you have been, have had a very trustworthy laptop, it's worked for a long time? You know, mine, I'm patting it here very nicely. It's been a great one. But I fired it up the other day, and it's got a line running right down through the middle of the screen. It's lost a pixel. And it's a 17-inch desktop replacement, and I like traveling with it because it's big, and I'm able to, I don't have to squint on a small screen. But yeah, I called home. I was talking to my lovely wife, and I said, "Honey, you're not going to believe it." Of course, her laptop has progressively gotten worse too. We've had them for a while. I guess they're going on 3 years. I travel quite a bit with them. Hers has got 4 or 5 lines, so now I'm probably going to retire this laptop and give it to my son or my daughter, maybe hook it up to a monitor. Still perfectly good, but boy, it's distracting to see that line in there, but it's really discouraging, and I probably just abuse it too much and then have, you know, carried it around through too many airports, went through too many x-ray machines, the whole nine yards. But anyway, talk a little bit about, just before we get into the content here, my flight home on Sunday was originally bad, but it has almost gotten worse. I called to have, trying to work with American Airlines to get home on Sunday, and instead of getting home on Monday morning, and the only way they could get me home was if I left out of Boston at like 7 a.m. on Sunday, flew into San Francisco, check this out, get in there like 11, then sit there until like 6 o'clock in the morning, 6 o'clock in the evening, and then fly from San Francisco to L.A., and then catch the last flight to Honolulu, getting into Honolulu at 11:30 on Sunday evening. Well, my wife wanted me home, and I told her I would do everything I get home, but when I called her and said, you're going to have to come to the airport to get me at 11:30, oh, she says, great, 11:30 in the morning, that's terrific. And no, it was 11:30 at night. It'll probably be midnight by the time I get my bags. So I've got a plan. As soon as I hit San Francisco, I'm going to go try to get an early hop into L.A. and then go beg and plead with the stewardess to let me on an earlier flight to Honolulu, which I know there are many. But with the way all this stuff going on with airlines and them doing inspections on aircraft, it's going to be ugly. So we'll let you know how it goes when I get to do the show on Monday night. Maybe I won't be home on Monday. Who knows? But at least I'll be there. Hey, we just got an RSVP via Ustream, so looking forward to seeing you tomorrow night. Okay, well, what else have I got here in my little show notes list? I don't have a lot. Of course, talked about the Portsmouth meetup, sleep, the laptop, flight home. Have had a very good time here. One thing I will say about this area, this part of the country, just amazing. You know, very historic. I know that they have a historic district here in Portsmouth. I was kind of driving around, checking things out, and it's definitely a nice little town. And I know they've got some economic issues in this general area a little bit, but overall looks pretty good. Of course, we're just a stone's throw from Maine, and pretty country, pretty area. So look forward to coming back to this area again. Actually, when I was out in Boston, I enjoyed Boston as well. So I have spent very little time on the East Coast over these past 25 years. So it's been nice to spend some time on the East Coast. But anyway, let's take care of a little business before we get into the show. Probably going to be scheduling to do a tech podcast roundtable a week from Saturday. I guess that will probably be the plan. And of course, if you want to improve your bottom line, you want to work smarter and save time and save money, you can meet clients and coworkers online with GoToMeeting. So you can do more and travel less. It's just like meeting in person. Use GoToMeeting, conduct presentations, demos, training right from your desk. The best part is you can try GoToMeeting free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcast. That's www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcast for a free trial. Thanks for GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Geek News Central Podcast. Along with that, want to thank our good friends over at GoDaddy, and I've been working on some of our servers over there, and I tell you, their technical support staff has been superb. We had a couple of small issues that made a phone call with them, and they took care of right away. Really impressed with the level of service over there and level of expertise. So if you're looking for a domain name, dedicated server, virtual dedicated server, shared hosting account, whatever it may be, make sure you get over to GoDaddy.com. When you get to that checkout counter, use the promo code TODD. That'll save you 10% on all orders. Some strict restrictions do apply. You can use the code GEEK5. That'll get you 15% off on orders $20 or more. And the code that's really going to save you a lot of money is that Todd20 code. That Todd20 code will save you 20% on one-year shared hosting accounts. Okay, so it has to be a one-year commitment, but that'll save you 20% off on a shared hosting account over at GoDaddy.com. And thanks, GoDaddy, for being a continued sponsor here at the Geek News Central podcast. Well, I've got a whole bunch of stuff for you tonight. I really, really do. Matter of fact, I had to cut some stuff out of the news listing. And I see we've got a number of people on Ustream, and I want to thank all of you guys for, and ladies, if there's some ladies in the group, for coming out. And we'll keep everyone updated on the show on what people are saying in the live stream. But anyway, as far as the regular content goes, I had been pretty critical of the podcasting support and movable type version 4. And I saw today a post by the folks over at GoDaddy. Matter of fact, it was done by Brian. He has posted a new plugin, and actually he's made some improvements to the plugin that he created after we had, essentially on a number of shows ago, talked about some of the concerns I had. And he addressed those and actually put together a real nice plugin. But he's made some improvement to it. And actually, I'm looking at what they've done, and it's really coming along a long way. So for those of you that are running Movable Type version 4 in your podcasters, you're going to want to check out what they have done and what the new plugin is capable of doing and supporting. It's got iTunes support built in, so you'll be able to put in all your iTunes-specific things and have all the tags supported. And I think the only thing that I differ on is because the templating system in Movable Type is so dynamic, I've been able to put I've had iTunes support in my RSS feeds from day one just because I just was able to manually add them to the template. But this is really going to simplify it for people that don't want to go in and mess with the templates. But I'm glad to see that they've made some improvements here. And he actually specifically was a result of feedback that myself and Bud Gibson had given him. So I'm glad to see they've taken some of that feedback and moved forward with it. All right, how many of your kids are using Google? I'm sure many of you that have kids that are on the internet, I bet you they're all using Google. Did you know that according to Google's terms of service, that if they are under the age of 18, that no kids are allowed to use Google services? I'm sure that's going to come as a surprise to all of you, but someone, I guess, over at CNET was digging around in the Google Terms of Service and actually found some legalese that states this: you may not use Google products, software services, and websites, and may not accept the terms if you are not of legal age to form a binding contract with Google. So I guess that pretty much spells it out for anyone in the United States, at least. If you live in the United States and you're under 18, you legally cannot use any Google products. So, well, I'm sure none of us are following that. I'm sure there's many, many thousands and millions of kids using Google on a daily basis. I did find it pretty ironic that they actually had that in their terms of service. And actually, this is going to lead into a terms of service discussion I'm going to have a little later in the show in relation to some more new developments in the Safari front. Well, one of the biggest news issues of the day was that Adobe has put out a free version of Photoshop. And so the makers of Adobe have released an online version of Adobe Photoshop. It's Photoshop Online. So this is, this has been a long, long, long time coming. People have been suggesting to them for at least 10 years to put together an online version of Photoshop. And, many of us probably have been using Photoshop from the very, very beginning. I know that I have. I don't consider myself an expert user by any means, but it's good to see that they have done this. So we'll see what comes of this. And I haven't actually played with it myself yet today, so I'm looking forward to actually getting and being able to use it to see how well it works. But anyway, they launched a basic version available. It's free online. And it's available over at adobe.com. And a lot of good, a lot of mixed reactions on it. But so far, not too many people were complaining. But pretty cool. All right, how many of you are Trekkie fans out there? Well, did you know that there is like a graveyard for Star Trek stuff? Now, I'm not a big Trekkie fan, but, you know, seeing all those props, all those, all the different movies that have been, that have come out, you just wonder where they've stored all this stuff that Hollywood has created. Well, there is a graveyard for Star Trek stuff. So we're going to have a link up in the show notes that's going to take you over there. For those of you that are Trekkie fans, you're going to be able to go over and look at the Starfleet Shipyard Graveyard, essentially, is. And I guess this is out of Lebec, California, L-E-B-E-C. So it's actually near when they were doing some stuff for one of the shoots outside of an electric plant. So there's some stuff over there. But anyway, we'll have that link up in the show notes tonight. Of course, I'm going to link up in a astronomy picture of the day. It was from March 27th, 2008. And this is the N44 complex, pretty impressive picture that was taken by Hubble, of course. So I have that link up in the show notes as well tonight. Now, as videos go, you know, sometimes it's just amazing what people videotape themselves doing. And today is no exception. There's a great article over on asylum.com, and I have the link up for you. You guys remember Caddyshack, when the Caddyshack crew was trying to kill the gophers? Well, in a real-life version of Caddyshack, this guy was using propane to try and gas out, tried to gas out the, someone corrected me. It wasn't Star Trek. It was Star Wars. I apologize. I mean, look, let me go back to the link. No, it is some of it. It is Star Trek. They're saying it's Star Trek, not Star Wars. So it is from the Star Trek film. So I'll go back to the article I was talking about. That's what I get for looking at chat. But anyway, this this guy's been using propane tanks to pump gas down into gopher holes and then lighten it off. Well, let's just go say the first couple of times didn't work. Well, worked out okay, but the third time he did it, it resulted in about $200,000 worth of damage. So I think you'll get a laugh out of the video, if nothing else. It's just amazing what people are putting on film these days. Over on Lifehacker at lifehacker.com, free ways to synchronize folders between computers. You know, this is probably one of the biggest complaints I've had over the years, is if you're working on a single PC, and let's say you have a laptop, and you're out and about, and you go on the road, or maybe you're using it as a primary computer, then if you are going to work on maybe your wife's machine, you just invariably, you'll never be able to, it's never works out where the files that you need are on a central place where you can go get them. And many people can't afford to actually have a home server, so maybe they've got just a couple of individual independent machines. Well, there's some cool software out there, and I've used some stuff in the past. I'm lucky enough now to have my own home server, but there's free ways to synchronize folders between computers so that every machine in your household can all have all the same data. So that no matter what machine you're on, you're going to have access to those Word files, the pictures, and everything else. And it's actually important for those of you that don't have a place where you're doing some offline storage is to keep pictures and that type of stuff backed up and cross-synchronized between machines. But anyway, Lifehacker's got a link to a number of free applications and ways to essentially get those that data synced between different computers. And they cover some stuff in here in Vista and using Windows Live and some other applications. So I have the link up to this in the show notes. And if you get any use out of this, I'd appreciate to hear from you. Of course, if you are using an application today that they don't mention in this article, I'd love to hear your feedback on that. You can send feedback to geeknews@gmail.com. Or you can call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Well, TorrentSpy. TorrentSpy.com has shut down. A little over a year ago, you may remember that the MPAA really went after Torrent Spy in a big way. They had a pretty big court battle in California. It was all to do over log files and Torrent Spy's refusal to provide log files to the MPAA. And the pressure was too great, and today they closed their doors. And according to the sources, it was just a matter of dollars. It was a very expensive battle, and they have essentially lost, and they've thrown in the towel. And, you know, a little over a year ago, Torrent Spy was one of the absolute biggest torrent trackers out there. So while I'm sure there are a number of torrent tracker sites to step up and are going to be able to, you know, do what Torrent Spy's not, you know, can do anymore, it just goes to show you that the MPAA, RIAA, and so forth are going to be continuing to go after all of these sites like this. And if they can't get them one way, they're going to get them another, and they're just going to litigate them to death. And that's essentially what happened here. So for those of you that have used a Torrent Spy in the past, you're going to have to find a new place to get your torrents. All right, over on dailymail.co.uk, you know, I don't know why. How come American press companies or American press doesn't have great reviews of shuttle missions? Because the Daily Mail has got some of the best shuttle pictures that I've seen on the net of the last mission that just ended. You know, I actually got a voicemail this morning, or actually last night. It was I was actually on the phone with a client, and I heard the call waiting, right, actually the thing beeping in my ear, and I looked at it, and I didn't recognize the number, so I didn't switch over to it. But one of the listeners of the show had said, "Hey, Todd, I just heard the space shuttle sonic boom," and it was kind of cool. He called in a live report, and I don't have a way to really patch that into the show tonight, but, you know, I was looking on the net today trying to find some pictures. I'm seeing, you know, kind of some stock footage of the shuttle of landing and being on the landing strip, but Daily Mail's got some really cool pictures and shows the crew, shows work that went on in the space station, gives some great views of the International Space Station from afar, up close. You know, you're looking at this one picture. That thing is getting massive. The International Space Station is just absolutely humongous. If you look at the astronauts working on it, in comparison to the total size, we've got a lot of stuff up there. It's amazing how big this thing is. And, of course, on the NASA website, they've got a place there where you can track where the International Space Station is. And I've never really taken the time to wait for it to come over Hawaii at night and actually look for it. But I think when I get back to Hawaii, I'm actually going to put the tracker up. I'm going to get the kids primed, and we're going to figure out when we can go out and we can see the International Space Station come over the Hawaiian Islands. But some of these pictures are really nice. They really, really are. And just, you know, the size of the solar arrays and everything going on, it's amazing. It really is. But good pictures by the folks over at Daily Mail. I do want to comment on this one picture. It just, you know, here's the guy. He's hanging on the one of the arms, and just this beautiful silhouette of Earth underneath it. Wow, what I wouldn't give. What I wouldn't give to, I'm sure all of us probably would do the same. If we could have a chance, it's just amazing. It's a good thing for a kid to strive for these days, is to, you know, get in the science field and work in the space industry. And, you know, it's a good goal to strive to be an astronaut, that's for sure. Okay, I've laminated enough on that. There we go. There was a Toddism there. All right, there's a BitTorrent plugin that has been created by the folks over at Osiris that is now tracking what's going on with ISPs. You know, with actually, there was an announcement today. I probably should have precluded that in this show tonight, but Comcast has announced that they're working with the folks from BitTorrent to no longer, at least at this time, to do a heavy packet shaping. So they've basically have said, we're going to throttle back, The only people that we're going to heavy pack a shape are those that are the hardcore abusers. So I don't know how much of a difference this is actually going to be, because they said before that they were only quote-unquote packet shaping hardcore users before, but apparently they're going to relax some of their packet shaping that they've had. And they said they're going to invest in their bandwidth. In other words, they're going to invest in the backbone that they have to add more capacity to support it, but they're going to work with the BitTorrent folks, and I don't know exactly how that's going to work. But for now, it looks like Comcast has backed down a little bit. But in lieu of this, the folks over at Osiris, and this is actually a BitTorrent application that I have used, they have introduced a plugin which is tracking which ISPs are actually packet shaping or doing stuff with the traffic. And they've got a list of some of the worst torrent ISPs. I didn't go actually look at the sites, but Cablevision, RCN, and Adelphia are pulling some of the same tactics as Comcast. So this is going to be a very interesting to watch, because if the FCC has taken as much interest in Comcast, they should now really go after the rest of these ISPs if they're doing the same exact thing. So again, they've got a actual plugin. And if you're a BitTorrent user, and you're using this application, this may be something that you'd want to do, to go out there and see if your ISP is doing any bandwidth throttling on you, and may give you some indication that they're watching you too. If you find that your content's being, you're being throttled. So pretty cool little plugin, and I'm going to definitely play around with it and see how it works, and I'll give you a report on whether or not they're throttling traffic in Hawaii. Now, I don't do a lot of BitTorrent movement of, different type of media, but I'll find something and give it a try and report back to you on a later show. Well, Microsoft must be worried about Google Docs, because apparently they are preparing something that's quote-unquote a top-secret project called Albany. Albany is going to combine Office Live Workspaces, Windows Live OneCare, and the Windows Live suite of services as a package of productivity and hosted applications. So it looks to me like Microsoft has seen the handwriting on the wall and is going to fight fire with fire. And I think really, as much as we talk bash Microsoft from time to time on their products of suites and things that they have, I think this is probably a good strategy for them, because Google Docs is as easy as it is to use that service. When I take text straight out of Google Docs and I put that into an actual Word file, the formatting is never right. So if the folks at Microsoft brought on some of the same type of services and made them available for free, I would be probably inclined to move to using those services versus using Google Docs, just because of compatibility-wise. Because everything that I send clients, proposals, everything has to be in a Word acceptable format. If it's not, that's the business world runs on Office. So if I can save time by not having to re-edit stuff that we've utilized in Google Docs, then I think I would definitely be prepared to work online in some of Microsoft's online suites. Now, I guess it all depends, too, on whether or not that they make it available free. So we'll have to see what happens here with that. But with the Office being, what does Office cost now, retail package, $300 or $400? They're going to have to do something, because people aren't willing to pay that kind of money anymore. And they're going to have to make their revenue up somewhere else. But the general public, I think, is starting to drift. Now, how many of you have started to drift to using online applications? How many of you no longer? I know many of you are using OpenOffice, and actually OpenOffice version 2.4 has been released. So if you're an OpenOffice user, you'll definitely want to go over and grab that update. But how many of you have migrated from Microsoft products to Google Docs? And is it because of cost, or is it because you just have the same experience using some of the other tools? I'd love to kind of get a feel, and what's that transition been like? Have you lost any productivity? Have you had to have a single installation of a Word on a computer when you're trying to send stuff to other people? Or how's that worked? Are you sharing documents online? Love to hear your workflow that you're using today for how you're doing document sharing and that type of stuff. Now, you may have remembered when I was out at the Consumer Electronics Show, and we had talked with the folks at Dash. And I was pretty psyched about this new GPS that was coming out. And I guess there's been some embargoes, and which were busted out today. I guess someone busted an embargo, so everyone was rushing to get their Dash reviews out. But if you're in the market for a GPS system, I would seriously look at the Dash Express. It's available on Amazon. I think it's about $400. There is a monthly service fee that goes along with it. And I think the service fee is $14 or $19. Don't quote me on the exact price. But if you live, and this is primarily for people that live in heavily congested areas, if you live in New York City, if you live in LA, any place that has heavy traffic, you're going to want to look at getting one of these Dash Express GPSs, because what it does is that the GPS is not just giving you data, it's out there talking to the GPS system and getting updated with information. Now, it's actually not talking to the satellite, but it's getting updates. What it does is there's all these semi-trucks that are on the road today, delivery trucks. All of them have those little units in them that report back traffic congestion. They're tied into the stuff that you see on websites that cities use for showing you where there's congestion at. And basically what this thing will do is it'll give you the best route. It's going to say, okay, hey, I-95 is backed up from this mile marker to this mile marker. Take exit number such and such, and here's the new route to get around the traffic. It's going to be proactive, and it's going to be able to help you avoid traffic jams. You know, you're not going to get into it and be sitting in it. You'll know long before you get to it, long as you've programmed into it where you're going. Oh, boy, I tell you. Unfortunately, in Hawaii, you know, it can tell you, go ahead and get off H1. But, you know, when we get off H1, the side streets are just as bad as the highway. So I don't know if it's going to do us any good in Hawaii. But if any of you are in Hawaii that get this thing, let me know. I highly recommend this. I was really jazzed when I talked to him. It is a very, very cool service. And not only that, it's if you're on the roll and someone gives you a call and says, hey, can you meet me up here? And, you know, maybe you don't have the address, or your wife calls you and says you need to stop somewhere and get something. They can actually email you on the fly. They can send you the directions to a special email address, and it will automatically update the system so that you don't have to just hunt and peck to get the address added. Or you can even send the your travel itinerary to the device when you're still at home. You don't even have to have it in your house programming it. You can send the information to it, and then it will automatically update when you turn it on. So it's going to be really cool. I think it's going to be a device that's going to sell well. They've been a long time coming with the service, and it has a lot more stuff than traffic, too. It's got all the basic stuff for finding places to eat and so forth. But anyway, lots of reviews. All you got to do out there is Google Dash Express, and you'll find plenty of information on it. Along with that, the folks at Bug Labs are really, really jazzed, too. They have sold out of their initial inventory, and the founders are pretty excited about it. So this was 100,000 units that they've sold. When I was at CES, I was a little bit I thought it was a cool device, but I didn't know how many people would actually buy these things to develop on them. I thought there would be a niche community of people that would do it, but they've sold 100,000 of them for, like, I think they're nearly $500. So they are out of their first build of these things, and it will be until May. If you've set on the sidelines and getting one of these, it'll be the next shipments will start arriving in May. So this is good news for those folks. It really, really is. And I guess their investment in time and some of the cool stuff they've done has paid off here. But 100,000, there's going to be 100,000 people with these little kits and going to be able to develop on them. So very, very cool. All right, now you remember me talking about the one laptop per child, right? Well, and I told you it was really a powerhouse machine. Sorry, the OLPC is not a super powerhouse. You know, it has a whopping 433 megahertz processor in it. But the hackers out there have figured out how to overclock the OLPC laptop. So now you can overclock the OLPC from 433 megahertz to 588 megahertz, and you can actually increase the bus speed from 166 megahertz to 233 megahertz, which has resulted in what they're saying is a much smoother ride. So you knew it was going to happen. It says safely can be upgraded and you get a 21% boost in system performance. Now, along with that, on another article that I saw today, it appears that the keyboards on the OLPC, the green plastic keyboards, and I was even when I saw it, I was kind of questioning how well they would stand up. But they're starting to see cracks in the actual keyboards. And what do little kids do when they see, you know, they start picking at it, you know? And so the folks at OLPC are getting reports back that, you know, kids are not being real nice on these keyboards. But there is a workaround out there where you can actually put a regular keyboard on the device. There's a little patch that can be put into the system so you don't have to use the green keyboard that comes with the OLPC. So for those folks on the show that received OLPC laptops, fair warning, let the kids know not to be picking at the keypads too much. And if you do, you just may have to put another keyboard on it. All right, Verizon today is, you know, I don't really get it. They went complaining to the FCC. Now, we all know when we have a cell phone, and let's say you're with T-Mobile, and you want to change from T-Mobile to AT&T or Verizon or Sprint, you can get to take your number with you, and there's a little bit of portability time to get that number from one phone to the other and get it switched over. So, you know, some people experience 24, 36 hours. Some people get it done faster. I think Brian, who's our creative director at Raw Voice, he had switched carriers recently, and I think his took like 12 hours. But what Verizon is basically saying now is they want the ability, and this is some gamesmanship here, because they want the ability now to be able to turn off new video subscribers' subscriptions with the cable providers. In other words, if you're with, let's say you're with let's say you're with a regular cable company, whatever the cable company may be, and Verizon comes into your area and offers up video services, which they're doing in many places, especially the places they're dropping in high-speed fiber, you can get your television service through Verizon. So what Verizon wants the ability to do is when they call you on the phone and sell you on the service and get you switched over, they want the ability now to reach out to your current cable provider and have that connection terminated. This is going to be an interesting ride on this one. We'll see how they make out, but they basically want some of the same rights that they've got with switching people over on phone services. So, you know, they understand that the game at stake is video, and they want to be in that market in a bigger way, and they feel the only way they can compete is by getting the right to be able to do this. So I don't know how I feel about Verizon calling my cable company and have my service cut off after I've switched to them, especially considering how long most of these providers take to get stuff turned on. Oh, yeah, I'd like to sign up for Verizon video services. Why, yes, sir, we'll be out in 3 weeks to do it. And then 2 hours later, your cable's cut off from your cable company. So I can see that happening. All right, in 2007, NVIDIA was responsible for nearly 30% of Vista crashes. This is wow. You know, if you have a Vista machine and you have a graphics card that is from NVIDIA in it, and it's been crashing, that may be the result. Microsoft was reported that ATI was responsible for 9.3%, Intel 8.8%, Microsoft 17.9%, unknown services 17%, NVIDIA 28.8%, and all others 18.5%. Now, the crashes that were reported, now get this, you know that little service that reaches out, would you like to report to Microsoft when you had an issue? Have you seen that pop up on Windows before? They received 1,663,000 reports, and that's a significant number there, folks. And when you see a 28.8% was caused by the folks over at NVIDIA on their graphic cards, boy, it does not bode well for them. It really, really doesn't. So I may have to, you know, what are you guys running in your laptops today? What do you guys have for graphics cards? This machine, this HP that I have, has an ATI card in it, but it's not a real super high. I think it's only got 128 megs of RAM for a laptop. It doesn't have too much. It's not too powerful of a video card. But I guess I'm going to have to keep that in mind if I have to update another laptop. So anyway, just a little word of warning out there for you. Okay, you know, I've been complaining. Here I've got my iPhone, and of course, those of you that are on Ustream, you can maybe you can see. I don't know if you can see it or not, but it's got T-Mobile on it, of course, and Edge on that phone. When I am away from any Wi-Fi and trying to get Twitter updates or check email, it's just terribly slow. But GigaOm is reporting that there's been some breakthroughs done by the folks at Nokia Siemens. They've been able to increase the speed of Edge data rate to 592 kilobits on existing Edge-capable GSM networks, which is going to be available in the third quarter of 2008. And it's going to be soon followed by what they're calling EGRPS2, which is going to result in downlink speeds of 1.2 megs and will double uplink speed to 473. Now, that comes real close to competing with EVDO Rev A. Well, in the upper spectrum, it doesn't. But what I see for a normal day-to-day performance of EVDO Rev A is usually about 1.5 down and about 256K up. You know, EVDO Rev A is supposed to be capable of like 3,100 kilobits down and 1,800 kilobits up, but I never see that kind of speed. But it is nice to see that that they made some improvements to that protocol. And so those of you that are not looking forward to updating your phone or changing anything, those of you on existing Edge networks, if they all upgrade, if your carrier upgrades, you're going to be able to get about a doubling of speed of what the current Edge network is capable of. All right, over at MikeDuncan.com, he's complaining about how his blog posts are being ripped off. And, you know, I think this is something that every blogger goes through as they are creating media out there and creating content. It's, you know, it's just a fact. Your articles, if you have an RSS feed on your website, it's just real easy for someone to come by and scrape your site and put it up on some hacker site. My content is all over the place on sites that I really don't want it on, but it's just a losing battle. But he talks about some particular bad artists, bad ripoff artists who are completely stripping out links to his website, replacing copyright notices, the whole nine yards, and he's saying it's becoming such a problem with him that people don't know who's the original author of the content. And I think that's pretty scary. I usually they just take everything, and the normal links to the content is usually maintained with references back. You know, that's really all you can ask, but if they're not even referencing back his original articles, it's pretty bad. So how many of you are seeing any of that? How many of you are seeing your articles being ripped and syndicated on other websites? All right, over on TechCrunch, Chris Perillo announced today, actually he announced, Chris Perillo announced on his website that he's going to be starting a large scale community CMS project built on the backbone of Drupal. So this is a pretty ambitious undertaking here. He's saying that he wants to have a CMS that's going to be able to have dig-style functionality, photo sharing, community forum, a blog, social network. You know, a lot of that stuff is kind of already built into Drupal I know that the blogging stuff is, the CMS capability is, you can do videos and you put photos on it. So I'm not exactly sure how much more he's going to change it, but he's looking for people to work on the project, looking for donations as well. So a little bit of buzz on that today. We'll see what Chris does on that. Good luck on that project, Chris. But, it, you know, I think it's there'll come a time here very, very soon when all of us will have on our websites almost the same functionality that we find on many of the sites that are out there today. Now, you know, it's like these little microsites that are doing that, and that's when, you know, really the social stuff will be out of control. It's already out of control, but it would be nice to have that type of a capability for, like, this audience. You know, if we had this little mini, you know, mini indie social community just on Geek News, it would be good. All right, YouTube has announced that they are they have released today a video analytics tool for all users. And they say whether your video's been viewed 10 times or 100,000 times or 10 million times, they're making available some statistics to let you know how it's been consumed, where the reference came from, what region it was listened to in, life cycles of the videos. So this is pretty exciting stuff coming out of the folks at YouTube. And it's about time. It really, really is. You know, people put a lot of content up there, and they have a right to know exactly what that video content's doing besides just the views. So it's nice to see that YouTube has taken this stance. Hopefully they'll have some sort of an API where people just be able to reach out in a cloud and grab that data out. But it's yet to be seen whether or not they're going to do that. All right, there's a good article over, it's out of the UK, and it's the Byron Review. It's a pretty impressive report. It's called Safer Children in a Digital World. It contains a listing of contains a glossary, contains bibliography details of the review process and lists of key contributors. It's got, there was some Todd-isms, wasn't there? And it's got stuff that parents, you know, some information on what parents can do, stuff that's actually happening on the internet. So, pretty big study done by UK. So, anyway, I'll have that link up in the show notes if you're interested in looking at it. Earlier in the week, CNET announced that they are cutting 10% of their workforce. This has resulted in 120 people being laid off, and it's part of a move to save money. Obviously, the you know, we've all of us that have been around in the space for a while probably remember getting different periodicals from ZDNet, and you know, that was a thing. That's how we got our news before, was through these weekly magazines. And obviously, that business has waned, and everything's now digital. So CNET is restructuring, and this is supposed to save them, I think, $10 to $12 million a year, obviously in reduced salaries that are being expended upon, and they're reshuffling the workforce, and they're going to be consolidating more of their HR-type services. So we'll see what happens with this, but they're in survival mode right now, as many of these online news companies are, including the New York Times. So we'll see. Good luck with CNET. You know, really, I get a lot of news from CNET, and it's, you know, they have a very good workforce of writers over there, and I'd really hate to see them go, you know, to go by the wayside and go out of business. I think we all, you know, as much as we talk, you know, I really don't consider, I should consider CNET mainstream, but I don't. You know, I guess I'm a geek, and I reserve the right to say that they're not mainstream, even though they really are. But I've said this before on this podcast, and I've kind of changed my outlook a little bit. We need to make sure that some of these industries survive, you know, because, well, frankly, I wouldn't have as much news report on. And also, there's nothing, there is something to said about having dedicated people looking at stuff. Now, it comes with agendas and everything else, and I know that that kind of goes against what a lot of bloggers think. They think that all these guys are part of mainstream press, should go away. But I think we rely on each other to keep each other straight. CNET gets a lot of news from bloggers. Bloggers get a lot of news from CNET. So there's a, you know, there's a give and take there. We'll see what happens in the future, but they're definitely going to have to change their business model in order to in order to stay in business over there. Now, in the most weird, I mean really weird story of the day, and I'm scratching my head on this because if it would have been dated April 1st, I thought it would be an April Fool's joke. But this is coming out of Japan. Japanese scientists are going to run some tests, and they're going to invest some serious money to test a origami, get this, an origami airplane that they want to release and have float down through the atmosphere from space. Now, this is no joke. They've done a, some guy spent a year or 18 months folding the most perfect paper origami airplane that was able to withstand, check this out, was able to withstand a wind tunnel test where they subjected it to how many Mach, how fast was the wind blowing? Let me see if I can find it. This is pretty amazing in itself, was that it, yeah, here it is. It survived Mach 7 speeds and temperatures of up to 446 degrees Fahrenheit in a hypersonic wind tunnel. And it was meant to simulate reentry type air speeds and heat. And they did it for short burns. In other words, short, high pressure runs. And this thing survived. So the Japanese government is going to shell out $300K next year to look at the feasibility. This is just unbelievable. They're going to look at the feasibility of having a return. I guess the ultimate goal, and as crazy as it sounds, is to come back on a paper airplane from space. If it would have been April 1st, I would think this is a April Fool's joke. And this is from AP News. I'll link it up in the show notes. You guys can all read through this. To think that this guy would spend 18 months folding, and this is not very big. Those of you on Ustream, it's only about this big. 18 months folding the perfect paper airplane that they're going to test. This is a prototype. Oh my gosh. What? I really don't get it. Okay, the folks over at Amazon have increased the capability of their Amazon EC2 service. And Amazon EC2, for those of you that are not in the know, is a web service that provides essentially resizable computing capacity on the fly. And it's kind of like having a lot of dedicated servers at your disposal with not having to pay for a lot of dedicated servers at a time. And what it will do is you pay for X number of CPU power, you pay a monthly fee for that, and then if you need more processing power, it is able to stack it on the fly and build as you need more processor power, and you get charged accordingly for those short boost of maybe web traffic or so forth, the processing power that you may need. And they've also assigned now the ability to have what they call an elastic IP address. And this is some of the kind of technology that we're kind of using at Raw Voice in our server setups right now, is that we have our IP set up in such a way that if we need to take a machine out of the mix, we can do so, and another machine takes over, and you really never notice the difference. It's just kind of elastic, and it moves. Well, that capability wasn't available at Amazon up until today, and they've released that. So this is a major, major improvement to that service, and allows people to have great uptime. If they need to bring a server down, make some changes, they have another one standing by, and then when they bring it back up, it's just transparent. People don't even really notice the difference, and it's very, very powerful. I think it's going to make Amazon EC2 a much bigger player in the, for companies that are looking to scale, need scalability at times. There are times at Raw Voice where we don't need a lot of processor power, but there are times in the evening when we do some cron jobs where we would like to add some scale to our cloud, and Amazon, to me, looks like it's going to be a good, viable way to do this, especially with this new Elastic IP stuff that they're introducing. So a lot of talk about that today, and we have two articles linked up, one from Computer World, one from ZDNet. So I have those both up, and it's going to improve, I guess, what I would call safety net for their services. Those of you that are Netflix subscribers, and we've kind of heard about this before, but I guess Netflix is now considering, again, offering movie streaming through the Xbox 360. So they are surveying subscribers again on this. So if you are an Xbox 360 user and you are a Netflix subscriber, you're definitely going to want to pay attention to this article. You're going to want to go over to Netflix and fill out the survey and give me your opinion. Now, I don't know. I guess, you know, for many of you, though, I'm sure you've got using your Xbox 360s as extenders. And it would make sense, you know, to be able to get your movies straight through the Xbox 360 onto the screen. And I, you know, if I had one and it was in the kids' room, it definitely would be a way for them to watch videos on demand, that's for sure. And I think it's a good idea. I really do. All right, lots of space news. I'm going to have some links up more from the shuttle stuff from yesterday's landing. There's also a article in Popular Mechanics. A California startup called X-Core, X-C-O-R, has joined the space tourism race. And they are going to be, they've already actually started to take people's bookings for high altitude or I guess some sort of a space experience. I don't exactly know how high they're going to go in altitude, but they've got a YouTube video released as well on their prototype. So a lot of people in the business now just going to be offering space tourism. So maybe by the time I'm older, maybe in my senior years, it'll be cheap enough to spend one's life savings for a once-in-a-lifetime trip to get in space. I don't know. It's probably going to be out of the reach of the average day Joes. But I tell you, I would spend my life savings to have a chance to go in space. That's for sure. So it didn't matter if it's with NASA or not. I don't care who gets me there. But I guess also, if it's only going to be like 3 minutes, you're up there and you look for 3 minutes, you're coming down, that's no fun. So it's going to have to be of a certain duration where you actually can get some enjoyment out of it. All right, Apple users, you're not going to be real happy with this. Check this out. Microsoft versus Apple. Who patches zero-day security issues faster? Well, I'm sure many of you would think that Apple does, but not so fast. There was a study done, and researchers from Swiss Federal Institute of Technology looked at how many times over the past 6 years the two vendors were able to have a patch available on the day a vulnerability became known with what they call a zero-day patch. They looked at 658 vulnerabilities affecting Microsoft products and 738 affecting Apple. And they only looked at high and medium risk bugs, and Microsoft won pretty handedly. Obviously, they've been in the business of patching a lot longer than Apple has, because Apple really did not see a big upswing in patching until about 2003. So this is kind of surprising. You know, everyone says Apple's so secure, but they have not been as fast as Microsoft has to patch bugs in their software. And I don't know if it's because of the, you know, before the smaller user base and they felt there was less risk, people weren't targeting it. But the at the Black Hat convention, the machine that was hacked the fastest was a MacBook Air. They have several levels of hacking that they allow. In other words, they say, okay, on the first day, they say, all right, if anyone can hack the machine with a zero-day, in other words, something that's not known already, a zero-day bug, they have a chance to, that's what they target that first day is new bugs, stuff that people haven't exploited before. And then on day two, they lessen the restrictions on the hacking. Now, there was Windows machines there was a Linux machine there was, of course, the Apple products there. But it took 2 minutes on day two for one of the Black Hatters to win the MacBook Air and actually hack the machine through a browser exploit and get in and essentially own the machine. So It didn't say how long it took for him to get into the Microsoft boxes, but there or the Windows boxes, but the guy won $10,000, and the laptops was able to exploit MacBook Air in 2 minutes. And this is from a default install that's being currently delivered by Apple. So just goes to show you, and it's something that's not patched either. So this goes to show you that you can get hacked out there on a Mac. And I don't know how many people have been. We don't hear too much about that. And it's obvious it's not too much. But the BBC, boy, we're at 59 minutes. I've still got more content to go through here. But I'll bust through three or four of these real quick. We don't have any voicemails tonight. So I've got some emails. We'll get through that here at the end of the show. But the BBC has a good article on China's battle to police the web. So that is a pretty good article talking about how they actually do filtering and how they actually stop content from getting in their country. Kind of in a more amazing story coming out of China. China's planning on trying to control the weather during the Olympics, and they're actually going to be seeding the clouds with different materials to try to keep the weather from spoiling the event. This is something they're really going to do. They have publicly said that they are going to try to alter the weather during the Olympics. Simply amazing. More fallout in California over the e-voting machines from ES&S. The California Secretary of State has reviewed an independent review of the e-voting machines, and boy, as we all suspected, not very good. They are not going to certify those machines and actually decertifies them because they have been able to be hacked very, very easily. A little article on a lawsuit that was going on Second Life. I'll have that up. Oh, and a Craigslist thing. You know, if you're not happy with your neighbor and you want to make sure that your neighbor cleans up his yard, all you got to do is put something in Craigslist and says, hey, free stuff, come get it. Well, sadly, this actually happened. A Craigslist scam has left an Oregon man without most of his belongings. There was a Craigslist posting put in saying that come and get it. The house has been abandoned. It's free for the taking. I guess the guy arrived home. They had pretty much already cleaned him out. They'd stole his horse. Took his horse. It's not a good situation. But I don't know if this is about a neighbor being upset and posting something to have this guy get cleaned out or, distraught girlfriend or whatever it is. But police are investigating. But I guess people over there loading stuff up by the truckload. So that's a Craigslist thing really, really gone bad. All right. I got an email from Bree, and this is in reference to an article. Bree, I want to thank you for giving me a heads up on this. Many of you probably don't know this already. There was a report that NASA was considering putting the Mars rovers in hibernation. There was some thought, I guess, at the space agency that they would be able to save $4 million in their operating budget by suspending the Mars rovers project or mission. And I guess the outcry from the public was unbelievable. And that idea has been scrapped. They're not going to be putting the Mars rovers in hibernation. But in lieu of that, it appears there's been some fallout. The NASA science chief has stepped down. There's not a reason being listed why, but it's being speculated that he was the one that suggested this and was the one that has left in lieu of this decision not to shut the Mars rovers down. So, it's kind of interesting. Here we've got a project that's returning terrific science back to us. These rovers are taking up a minuscule amount of budget. The science being gained is huge. And you would think, it just goes against my better nature, and I think most of our better nature, to think that they would shut down a program that's still active in collecting science. I just don't get it. I guess most of the public did not either, but we don't have to worry. The Mars rovers are still safe for operating. The funds are going to be there. But it's a little bit of shakeup going on at NASA. All right, lots of discussion going on in the Ustream stream. And I'll talk to all of you guys when I get done here in a few minutes with the show. But let me go ahead and get into the email comments tonight. A second show in a row, no voicemail. I guess you all have decided that the shows were too long and decided not to call in. And as promised, I'll get you out of here is on time today. But again, I do want to thank Bree for her heads up that she sent this to me. And I was not able to really blog about it at the time. But thanks for the quick heads up on that. And glad it was resolved before the show tonight. Got an email from Michael. He said, "Hey, Ty, my name is Mike and I live in Schenectady, New York." I'm sure I just messed that up. "When I first started listening to the show, it was low in the double digits." Oh, man, what was that? Am I still on? Yeah, I'm still on. That was weird. I thought I went off the air. All right, let me go back and read the email here. "When I first started listening to your show, it was low in the double digits, and I listened only on my computer because I had no portable device. It was being able to listen to your show while on the road that motivated me to get an MP3 player, so I went out and bought an iRiver 2-gig device and stuck you in my ear. That iRiver died on me, and I just got another to replace it. I lost that and replaced it with a SanDisk 2-gig. And oh, boy, that one got stolen, and so he went out and bought a 4-gig SanDisk. So he lost that one, too. Boy, you have not had good luck with MP3 players. These things are so small, they fall out of coat pockets, especially for big guys like me. Well, just a few weeks ago, I went out and purchased a Zune 80 gig. With its larger physical size and weight, I know where it is on me at all times. I think it's going to work. I tell you what, Velcro." Velcro. So he says, "So totaled up, I've spent at least $1,000 to listen to you and haven't regretted any of it. Mike, you are the listener of the day, my friend." Oh, my goodness. He said, "I've listened to your show at Ground Zero, trained in Norfolk, at my sister's wedding. I was standing at the altar with her. Hope you'll understand." Oh, you were listening to me at the wedding? Dude, "you've been with me in the subway and locked out of a, in a locked, what? You've been with me in a subway in and in a locked unit of a psychiatric ward." Oh, part of his job. Okay. "And so add these to the places you have been heard." He said, boy, here it is where he lives. "This is where TV got its start, in the home of GE and Knowles Atomic Lag. But there's a void of tech entertainment here. You fill that void for those of us that listen. Keep up the great work, Mike." Thanks, Mike. And don't lose that new iPod, all right? Hang on to that baby tight. Got an email from Shane that says, "Hey, Todd, as a mom of a family of four, every time we go to dinner with friends or just hang out, everyone is talking about the economy. Very few of my acquaintances are talking about traveling for spring break or summer." He says, "It's perfect time to check out Deal Locker. So for those of you that are looking for some deals, check out Deal Locker at deallocker.com. They got some good coupons over there available. I got an email from Clinton. He says, "Hey, Todd, regarding your question on Monday's show, I used the Creative Zen 8-gig model and love it." And I was actually looking at the stats. I did see where the Creative Zen folks are breaking out in our stats system, so that's pretty good. A fair number of you are using the Creative products. Got an email from Bill. He says, "You're seeking opinion on MP3 players. Any $30 player will work with typical 5 to 10 minute song files, but try and use them as an adult would with audiobooks or several hours of recorded streams and webcasts. Most are crippled, worthless, with no bookmarking, or they just use a proprietary bookmarking system or a DRM encrypted bookmark file. Very, very few have an open standard bookmark. I am saving money for an Asus EEPC that will play any open or closed standard MP3, WMA, RMA, RAM, OOGG file using an open source, easy to use media player with a simple slider button, and you can find your place in any of the files in seconds. Ubuntu has all the codecs available to play any useful file. I don't subscribe to audiobook services using DRM encrypted formats. The cost of mini PC is not much more than a high-end MP3 player, and that is a pain to use." I kind of agree with that. It's actually a good way to think. Got an email from Minus. He says, "Aloha, Todd. In your last show, you mentioned the top 10 list of MP3 players. Wanted us, your faithful listeners, to write in if using a Zen as our player. I've been a fan of Creative's products for a long time, and this is my third or fourth MP3 player from them. He says, I love it. It has good sound quality. It's got a 2.5-inch screen, lots of colors. It says it has an FM, built-in mic. So I'm not going to read through the whole email here, but he says he listens to a huge list of podcasts. Bestofstreetfire.net, Buzz Out Loud, Cranky Geeks, DLTV, Extreme Tech, GeekBrief.tv, Mahal Daily, Security Nile, System Techzilla, Twit, Windows Weekly, and of course GNC. Thanks for the awesome show and keep up the great work. Thanks, Minus. Appreciate that. And you're out of Hawaii, so you have to come to one of our podcasting events. Got an email from Leonard. Hey, regarding show number 354, I'm listening to this podcast all the way from South Africa. Leonard, thanks and welcome to the show. Got an email from JP. Todd, in case you never covered this specific, it's the issue of the UHF spectrum relocation in the 700 megahertz region and that the current professional wireless microphones are destined to become illegal. Yeah, I know about that. We talked a little bit about it on the last show, and I realize that this is an issue, but the folks at Google are trying to work through this with the FCC and encourage other companies to get on board on it. But yeah, I've got pro video gear, and I'm definitely worried about my wireless devices being illegal. Got an email from Yitz. He says, hey, Todd, I'm using a hard drive-based Creative Zen Vision M, and says I've downloaded all my casts using the ZenCast application. Got an email from DT. He says, once again, I'm catching up to our podcast in response to Kelly's email on ISPs fighting spam. I think she is right, and they should sort the spam out first before they go after the file shares. But instead of being reactive and waiting for the customers to call, I think the ISPs should be proactive and send snail mail or phone them on their high outgoing emails. This will please their customer base because customers won't necessarily have to navigate through their call centers and will talk to a rep who has a specific reason and know why they're calling, just like credit card companies who phone you when they think they have caught an unusual activity on your card. I agree, DT, I do too. And Danny's out of Eastbourne, UK. Last email out is from Eric. Actually, I don't think this one's for the show. Yeah, anyway, I'll get back to you on your email, Eric, and almost let the cat out of the bag there. All right, we're in hour 10. We're out of time. All right, folks, thanks for hanging out tonight. It's kind of weird doing the show with the Ustream thing going on, but I'll talk to the Ustreamers when I get done here, when I shut off the audio. For the rest of you, I'll be back in Hawaii next week and back in the regular studio, a normal show format. So make sure that you're ready for the show to come down on Tuesday. For those of you that have hung out with me today, it's been fun. As always, geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365, 619-342-7365. And until Tuesday, we'll take care and we'll see you then. Aloha.